This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Sean Valette is in studio, and he's going to be interviewing.
We have Craig Gilson with us. Craig Gilson joining us, the Senior Director of Electric Operations for Ameren, Illinois. We are suspending the usual rules, Jennifer, kind of like they say at city council meetings. And, Craig, I sure appreciate you taking time to join us. I'm sure you are a little bit on the exhausted side.
It's been a long 24 hours, Sean.
All right, let's talk about the extended outage. You talk about rogue weather, talking to the fire types out there, the fire and emergency services types. This was a different kind of storm that just, it didn't just take down trees. It was a unique storm, indeed.
It was unique, Sean, and the fact it was so widespread just created a lot of more challenges for us. We experienced 65 to 70 mile per hour winds across most of service territory, so took down trees, took down power lines. It was pretty devastating.
Now, I've seen like these big storm systems. I know when I worked out of St. Louis, I'd see the junction of 270 and 44, and it was like an army of power trucks going to a specific situation where severe weather hit one impacted area. But like you said, I looked at the NOAA storm damage map, and it just looked like a kid with chicken pox. I mean, dot, 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 dot. And you already, as far as the utilities that kind of team up like fire departments and do mutual aid, there were already a lot of resources devoted to what happened in Chicago, a couple of days before that. So you couldn't exactly send in all of the units you would have liked to have sent in.
Yeah, good thought, Sean. We have brought in over 1,200 resources to assist with storm restoration. And like you said, it was widespread, so we couldn't get a lot of resources from neighboring utilities. So we brought in resources from Kentucky, Indiana, Missouri, Ohio. So we've got over 1,200 right now engaged with storm restoration.
You know, it's something to see your linemen work. I've seen the lineman challenge where they climb the poles and just do unbelievable things. It's a physical endeavor. It's a first responder type endeavor as far as the danger, what have you. Just talk about just how difficult the process is of putting power back together, where it's not a matter of fixing something at a substation or dealing with the aftermath of a squirrel who got in the wrong place.
There are a lot of challenges with it, particularly once this widespread. Our first responsibility is to the safety of our customers and our coworkers. So as soon as a storm rolls through, we'll have damage assessors out. We'll have our one-man trucks out trying to what we call cut and clear. So if there's wires down, we'll make sure they're not energized. We'll cut them back to get them cleaned up so we can bring in a crew in to, if we need forestry, we'll bring a crew in to remove trees. We'll then bring our line resources in to restore power. It takes a lot of coordination with the dispatch center that makes sure the lines are de-energized and we have clearance for our coworkers to go in and work on it.
Well, it looks like you've had a lot of progress in a lot of places. I know Wood River, Alton, but in between that got hit hard. Greenville hit hard, Vandalia hit hard. I know a lot of areas in between hit hard, and a lot of progress. I know the northern part of Litchfield is stubborn, and 350 out. The last time I looked, the Edwardsville area, 350 to 400. I guess the more trees, the more problems.
That has created a lot of problems with outage. We started out Friday morning was a peak. We peaked at about over 53,000 customers out on Friday morning. We're down to less than 6,000 now. In the Hillsboro, Litchfield area, we're down around 2,200. We're continuing to, as we clean up other areas, collapse all the resources we have to the Hillsboro, Litchfield, Maryville area.
It's something, and I guess just folks have to maybe be a little proactive as far as being prepared for, the next case of rogue weather and, take some steps and have a game plan in advance. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a lot of hot weather safety tips we have on our website, but just, you know, be sure to check on your friends, neighbors, relatives. Know where the cooling centers might be, so if you do have a power outage, you know where to go. Do things like keep your shades drawn during the when the sun's out, just to keep the impact of solar heating down. So those are some things you can do. If you do have a generator, a portable generator, make sure that it's outside and away from windows and doors.
It's amazing that these folks can work at this for, how many hours do you let these guys go in an emergency where they have to just keep pushing, because obviously for some people it is at some level a convenience. It's not you couldn't label it a convenience when people have groceries in the fridge, what have you, but when it goes for some people, every hour of power is absolutely crucial, health situations, what have you.
It is, and we typically work our coworkers about 17 hours on and then give them a 7-hour break. The heat of the day yesterday made things a lot more difficult for us, not only for us, but for our customers. We're back today, cooler weather, so we'll help not only lessen the impact for our coworkers out there, but also for our customers. And we do appreciate the patience of our customers. Just want to assure our customers that we have the resources we need, and we're going to restore power safely and as quickly as possible.
Yeah, in some of the tougher environments, I know I saw one time that workers were assaulted while trying to restore power, which is crazy. A different reception here, and the food truck JNC Eats, I saw they went out and they're delivering pulled pork to people restoring power, and that appreciation has to matter when they're working at it for 17 hours, and it just has to make the job easier.
Absolutely. Our coworkers take a lot of pride in their work, and when they have people come out, thank them, or bring food, it just really encourages them and reinforces their efforts to get things done.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate your time. Again, we've had a chance to talk to Craig Gilson, the Senior Director of Electric Operations. Just any specific thoughts on what, and I haven't had an update in the last 45 minutes as far as if you have any intel on the north side of Litchfield, which seems to be our biggest trouble spot right now.
Yeah, we have a ESRT of late tomorrow morning, but the majority of the customers will be on tonight. There will be some stragglers that go into tomorrow, but our current plans are to get majority of the customers throughout the state on tonight with a few we have to finish up in the morning.
Yeah, and I guess, and I'll shut up on this note, and that's one of the unique things of the power restoration effort with so many trees out, and I know, you have to do some things, take power down and bring it back up. So there were people, I guess, well after the storm who lost power, and some people who got power back and then lost it again. This is something that comes with a little bit of quirks, but you err on the side of safety.
We do, and a lot of times we'll have to open up a switch to clear a line, then we'll get customers back on. But then once we get the repairs made, we'll have to take the line out of service again to make the reconnection. And I'd encourage customers to keep an eye on your ESRTs, because as we get crews out there working on the in an area, we will update the ESRT to more accurate.
Yeah, and again, you're on the side of caution as far as people's reactions. You don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, so usually you underpromise and overdeliver.
We try to be as accurate as possible, but sometimes when you're trying to do a global ESRT, we know some customers are going to be on a lot earlier as we go through an area.
Well, I sure appreciate your time, and thanks for the work that, boy, your team does out there. It's no picnic. But thanks again, and appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Sean.
All right. Well, we will get on to the business of sports, Jennifer, and with all of the usual pomp and circumstance. You know, it's kind of like graduations. You know, you can't have a graduation without, that music. Da, 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 da. Well, same thing with Sports Saturday.
Yeah, well, obviously Adam Wainwright didn't pitch as well as what I was kind of hoping he was. You know, I was texting Tim not too long into the game. I'm like, oh, my gosh, typical Adam Wainwright. And Tim's like, oh, I think he's pitching well. Well, you know, things fell apart quickly, it seemed. And I think I read in an article that I think this is the third game now that he's given up four runs and a start, you know, and you keep thinking, I keep watching it. I'm like, man, why do they leave those pitchers in so long? But, I mean, I know they want him to eat up innings, you know. And I'm trying to give the guy, you know, I keep watching it, and it's like, man, it's, you know. I mean, I feel bad for him in a way. You know, I'm trying to give, I'm trying to have positive thoughts every time I watch him start, but sometimes that kind of falls by the wayside. But anyway, you know, and he got through, and it was 3-1, and then, oh my gosh, they brought TJ McFarland in. I'm like, oh boy, the wheels really fell off after they brought him in. Yeah, I was not real happy with his performance. But I'm telling you, the Cardinals fought in the ninth inning and came back and hit after hit, and you know, and then they had Goldschmidt up at the plate, and he could have, you know, it would have been nice to see him, there's two on, I think, at that time. That'd been nice to see him get, you know, a three-run homer. But, you know, the guy, he's just unbelievable right now. That guy's on fire. And, you know, they can't do it every time. You know, they're human. They make errors. He struck out, but, hey, that's all right. You know, they battled back. So, power, hats off to him, trying to come back to win.
I figured it was hard for you to watch as a Wayno critic. And then there was Wayno Jr., Michael Wacha.
Yeah.
Style of pitcher, and you weren't a fan of old Pac-Man either.
Yeah, not really. But, you know, I didn't watch, obviously, any of the post-game or anything. But, you know, I'm wondering how Wacha felt about, you know, facing his old team and, you know, getting the win. So, anyway.
You know, I hear Fenway is not the most fun place to watch a game as far as the creature comforts, the 12-inch wide seats, made for the way people looked in 1912, and I think I would have been Godzilla to the people in those days before World War I. But, boy, it sure is compelling on television. The deep corners, the things the corner outfielders have to do. And again, Ted Williams, okay, I hear he wasn't a nice guy. He had a weird end with his son, you know, sending him off to the cryogenic lab. But doggone it, I mean, you talk about an American superhero. I mean, he's Captain America. A guy who can hit 400, go off to the military. He didn't just, oh, isn't that nice? This man of prestige has gone off to the military, you know, kind of like Elvis and G.I. Blues and all that. No, he was an elite fighter pilot. Then he goes back to baseball. Then he goes back to the military, and he didn't just become a fighter pilot again. He adapted to jets. Pardon me for pounding things, but
that's okay.
I'm just blown away. Ted Williams. Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah. I'm coming back at an older age. I'll hit about 400 again. Unbelievable. That guy. Love to have like an ounce of his DNA. That would be a nice Jurassic Park movie. The heck with dinosaurs. Let's bring back Ted Williams. Anyway, well, enough of that. Well, I didn't have much success connecting with the folks in Nacomas, and maybe they're busy over there at the BRS Museum because, you know, all this stuff that's happened. Well, let's talk about the power outage for one thing. We've had some tough incidents. I won't go into I won't even bring them up, but I think they go without saying. You know, we've had some rough news stories here the last couple of months, really throughout the year. So anytime you get a chance to have a feel-good moment like Reed Detmers and that no-hitter, I mean, it's just like the whole county was linked. You know, the word got around social media, texting and everything. Mayor Don Downs over there in Hillsboro watching. I mean, just a thing that brought people together. And Topps put out some baseball cards for that, and they went pretty fast. Well, if you didn't get them, you have your chance over at the BRS Museum. The museum is open right now, and Bottomley Roughing and Chalk, I hate to over-abbreviate, you know, like we had that with the Ameren interview, estimated restoration time, by the way, ESRT or whatever, that's what that was.
I wonder what that, you know, I thought about cutting in and asking what that guy, I thought maybe it was estimated time of the power coming back on.
Yep, you were on target. So starting at 9:30 and up until 11:45 while supplies last, they're selling the Reed Detmers Tops no-hitter cards, and they're $10 each, limit of five, so it is first come, first serve, cash or check will be accepted. Your plastic will not get it done. So there you have that. We'll take a break. We'll talk to my friend Scott Warman with, I still want to say Fox Sports Midwest. It just, Bally Sports still is an adjustment, but it's a new era. It's gambling and everything else. So we'll have that coming up in moments. You're tuned to Sports Saturday on WSMI.
9:24 right here on FM 106 and Sports Saturday, being brought to you by Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond, Kurt's 24-hour towing in Litchfield, call 324-2400, Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a roll up health care, Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville, taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms, Huff & Sons Funeral Home in Raymond, Hillsboro and Farmersville, Mark Stearin, your State Farm agent in Litchfield, Nancy's Pizza in Litchfield, Prairie Town Feed Service, they're serious about their service, Garrell's Auto Body and Repair, see Dwayne Garrell doing it right since 1982, Woods Basement Systems, Litchfield National Bank, the friendly bank with three locations to serve you, Montgomery Nursing and Rehab in Taylor Springs, Mike Belovich, a REMAX agent in Macoupin and Montgomery County, Hillers Sheet Metal, your American-made York heating and cooling dealer in Hillsboro. Your shelter insurance agent, John Blake. See John at 300 South State Street in Litchfield. Jessica Chapelier, your country financial agent in Hillsboro. And Fleming Tall Fall and Company in Litchfield, Carlinville, and Staunton. And in four, Tim Mizon this Saturday with Sports Saturday. Here's WSMI's Sean Valent.
All right. Thank you very much, Jennifer. And I did hear from the folks over at the BRS Museum getting ready for the big sale of the Reed Detmers no-hitter cards from Topps, so be aware of that till 11:45 this morning. And again, that is cash or check. The plastic, they don't have the little square attachment to their phones, so it's old school, just like the ball players inside, cash or check. So be aware of that. And also, they will be out at the Nokomis Homecoming as well, so... Just a great part of the community there. Well, one of my favorite people in the business, I had the honor of working with him over the years, and it's a face and voice you're probably familiar with. Scott Warman with Volley Sports. I still want to say Fox Sports Midwest. It takes me a while to adjust to anything. But, Scotty, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, buddy. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Well, how long have you been at it now when you talk about Bally's? And now I sound like I'm saying Bollywood instead of Bally's, but and Fox Sports Midwest, you've had a pretty good run over there.
It's still hard to try to keep it, even though we've been Bally's for a couple of years, I know. Sean, I've been there, probably started doing some hockey playoffs fill-in for the network in 2000, I think it was 2011. So 11 years, I guess, and part-time and then full-blown started right around April, May of 2016.
Well, I know you have to be a survivor. I know you come from the radio side as well and spent time handling the Rams network, the Blues broadcast, and everything else. Boy, what's the key to survival in a crazy business?
You know, I'm sure you get the question just like everybody else. Now, it really is survival. I mean, what has changed in our industry, whether it's radio, TV, print, you name it, in just the last 5 years, much less the last 30-plus years that I have been in it, I just tell young people that you got to grind at it, and you're going to, and you know this, Sean, just as well as I do, that nothing's going to go easy. You got to work hard, and you got to take that extra effort to try to keep going, especially when you get knocked down. And if you really want to reach where you want to be at in this industry, that's pretty much how you have to try to obtain your goals. And it's not an easy road, and especially now because, you know, there's not as many jobs out there that are available in our industry as there were 5-10 years ago.
See, you've got that cool Common Collective appearance that it looks like you always meant to go that way, that path. I'm like the cockroach who crawls out in the day after that 1983 nuclear war movie and like, wow, I guess he survived somehow. You know, you didn't expect that. I didn't expect to say it, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, that kills me. When I did the Rams Network, they said, you know, we'd like you to be a little looser. And at the time, I was like this Harvey Dent character. You know, I mean, like, I was either, that's the way it is, and then I could go over to another show and be a screwball. I couldn't merge the two. Now, if I could go back in time, that might have gone better. But anyway, it...
practice makes perfect.
I'm telling you, man, it's got to be a real thrill ride, though. I mean, witnessing history, and it has been, you know, some pretty historic times. It's kind of hard to look back at the Rams and the Super Bowl title because there's no evidence of it. I mean, there was the street named after Georgia near the Dome. I imagine that's changed. But the Blues winning the Cup, I mean, has there been anything more unthinkable than that? That still, 3 years later, doesn't seem real.
I know. Honestly, at the time, being with the Rams and when they won the Super Bowl, it was pretty amazing because when you harken back, as I said, at that time, here was a city that lost their football team to Arizona. There was no football. And all of a sudden, you have another football team that comes in their first few years in the city looked much like the team that left, you know, never won. And then you have this miracle year where all the stars are aligned, and you have your first home playoff game, and then you win a championship. Obviously, as we all know, that has been kicked to our guts several times by what eventually transpired with that team. But it was a pretty incredible moment. I will say also, being a part of the radio broadcast on the radio network for the 2011, where you had Game 6, which is probably one of the more greatest, or maybe the greatest game that we've ever seen in St. Louis sports, with the David Freese home run going to Game 7. Really incredible. But it was funny, we were just talking about this the other day at work, is the fact that, you know, we just went through, as you mentioned, Sean, the three-year anniversary of the Stanley Cup championship. And I always say, even harken back to that Sunday night on June 12th, where the whole city downtown corridor was just draped in blue. There were so many fans down there. It was chaos. They were ready to party. Obviously, it didn't happen. People were disappointed. But then you had 3 days later, on Wednesday, the 15th, and the Blues win the championship, and you have a full Enterprise Center. You have half of Busch Stadium packed. You have people everywhere. It was so, I hate to use the term glorious, but it really was. And then you should go to Saturday, and you have the parade. And, Sean, it just, it's really the greatest week of my life. You're just literally on cloud nine. And still, to this day, I agree with you, Sean. I get giddy about it because I think they're in the back of my mind, while I always, you know, went to Blues games and followed the Blues as a kid growing up here in St. Louis, there was always a part of me that, we're so close. But then there was, as the years kept going by, I'm like, am I ever going to see a Stanley Cup championship? Are we really the Cubs of the NHL? And then it happened, and obviously, as they say, the rest is history. And it's definitely I've been blessed, Sean. I told you this before. I truly have been blessed to witness those things and be a part of them somehow, some way. And it's been incredible. And obviously, the Stanley Cup championship is one we'll never forget.
Well, I know they reinvented fan engagement. Usually the community relations department and some people put together a game plan, and here's what we're going to do to be fan-friendly, or, you know, we'll have a big event. This was just completely organic, and, mm-hmm. and I mean, I think things that have never been seen before, I mean, they just said, you know, we're not going to just sit on a bus and wave at people. They got yep. out of the buses. Now, it wasn't so fun if you were in the sixth row, standing behind five rows of people. You didn't see much.
Right.
But on television and for those in the first few rows, it's phenomenal. I mean...
they brought the party to the people. They were chugging beers with people. They were letting them touch the Stanley Cup. They were taking selfies. It truly was amazing, the whole day. And knowing the process, being a part of that broadcast, I mean, that thing extends. The parade, Sean, actually went almost an hour longer than what it was supposed to. And that's because the guys, as you mentioned, everybody got out of their cars and, you know, wanted to make the fans a part of it. And then obviously when they got to the arch ground, which was just another incredible sight when you see some of the pictures taken from the stage area, that went longer too, because it was a celebration that, you know, so many people have wanted, especially the longtime Blues fans for so many years, not to mention some of the guys that have been with the organization, as we all know, especially our dear friend, the late Bobby Plager. He wanted his parade. And honestly, I can tell you this, and you know this, Sean, is, you know, working with Bernie Federico for a number of years now, and you can't find a finer human being. And if you would meet Bernie and you didn't know anything about hockey, you just think he's a regular guy, you would know that Bernie is actually one of the greatest players to ever play the game of hockey. That's just how he is. He's just a regular person. But I know, being with him and becoming friends with Bernie, that how much this team and this organization means to him. So for guys like Plager, for guys like Federico, even a guy like Brett Hull, who obviously won a cup with somebody else, but these guys still bled blue, as we would say. And for them to actually get to witness that and finally break the ice, so to speak, and get that Stanley Cup championship, I couldn't be more happier for them, because I know how much that organization meant to them.
Bernie's had an interesting life. I mean, all of a sudden, the team and the city you love, yeah, they're talking about moving the team to your hometown. That had just one of the, you know, I mean, these interesting, I mean, that's just what, one thing that drove me crazy about the Blues Cup run is you had all of these interesting stories, and they weren't told as, it seemed like the St. Louis media turned it into a pop culture of the moment event, as opposed to the long struggles and the life and death of Doug Wickenheiser, the hero of the Monday Night Miracle. Did that frustrate you at all? Because that's one thing. It's like there was no discussion about Roman Turek, or, you know, why did they trade Holly away? Why did they let Gretzky leave? And there are just so many stories of frustration. You just didn't hear that.
No, you didn't. I think you kind of get caught in the moment, that's for sure. It's really, to learn, working with some of these guys, kind of the inner workings, especially you bring up the point of the team potentially moving in 1983. And I remember talking to Bobby Plager and Bernie about this at one time. At the same time, we were down after a Blues practice. And Bobby was telling us at the time, while there was confusion for Bernie and the players as to what's going to happen when, remember, the ownership had left. There was no ownership. And Bobby would go into the office at the old arena on Oakland Avenue, along with like three or four other people. They weren't getting paid, Sean. It was just like, we would go and we'd just say hi to each other and, you know, talk and chat or what have you. But there was really no business being done, because we were just kind of in flux. And the other part of the story is the fact, before Mr. Arnest eventually bought the team, was in 1983, the Blues did not have a draft. They went on. The NHL went on with a draft, but the Blues never drafted one player because there was no ownership. There was nothing. And if you think about that, that's really unprecedented. And so somehow, some way, they still maneuvered with all the great players that were drafted, especially right around either Bernie's draft or right around that same time, the Brian Sutters, the Wayne Babbages, the Mike Liutes. They survived that until Arnest started selling off the team, because, you know, he didn't really have the deep pockets as we eventually found out, which Bobby and Bernie would tell me some incredible stories about Mr. Ernest and how he was upset, even if you would, like, sign a hockey stick and give it away to a fan because that costs money.
You know, I think the St. Louis Cardinals could have taken the football Cardinals, could have taken a cue from Ralston Purina and just skipped the draft based on some of
well, they kind
John
of did.
Lee,
think about...
Pizarkowitz. I mean, my word. It was...
Clyde Duncan, keep going down the line, buddy.
Oh, my word. Well, I pretty much run us out of time. I'll talk about two quick things. Yep. Talking about the Cardinals. You know, Michaelis, I didn't know what to think. You know, this is, again, you know how pitchers are. Steven Strasburg money. You might as well set the fire in Washington and just burn some Benjamins. It is a difficult thing employing a pitcher, and I didn't expect that much of Miles Michaelis this year, but holy cow, has he delivered.
It's pretty incredible when you think about it because, you know, he really obviously was an all-star his first year here. It really took the team by storm and pitched very well because, you know, the guy went overseas and you didn't know really what to expect and really didn't know a heck of a lot about him, even during his short term in the majors. So, yeah, you're right, Sean. I think Miles is healthy. I think he also had a mindset that he wanted to prove maybe some naysayers that might have been out there. You also consider Adam Wainwright. Again, I think we're so used to Adam being so consistent and so, if not great, close to being great, but I think he has been great at times. This man is 40 years old, Sean. He will be 41 at the end of August and still pitching the way he is. I mean, he got lifted last night in, what, the seventh inning. He is consistently taking this team as a 40-year-old man and pitching at a very high level still into the seventh inning. And you just don't see that, especially with some of these younger pitchers. You get five, maybe six innings, and you're happy as a clam. And I'm even reading stuff right now where somewhere it's saying that potentially somewhere down the line where we have these, quote, openers where guys only go like three innings maximum, that might be the complete wave of the future of Major League Baseball, which I think for a lot of us old school baseball people almost seems completely foreign. Even seeing openers, while sometimes they work, seems still foreign to all of us. But to get back to what you're saying, Miles Michaelis, absolutely amazing. I know Al, who I worked with last night, Al Robotsky, had mentioned that he thought that Miles actually pitched better the game before the near no-hitter on Tuesday, where he pitched a complete game in Tampa on that Thursday afternoon. The problem was the kid that pitched on the other side of Tampa for Tampa was better than Michaelis because Michaelis pitched eight innings and only had 85 pitches. Excuse me, which is about as efficient as you can get. So I think the Cardinals are really in good hands with those two and Dakota Hudson. It's a matter of how healthy Flaherty is going to get and if you can get Matz back and see how well Matz is going to do. It seems to me, at least, the Cardinals, and they know this because they're obviously way smarter than I am, have to try to go out and find some more pitching somewhere before the trade deadline, which obviously comes up in over a month. But I think it's something that they seriously have to take a look at to bolster whether it's A, the bullpen or the starting rotation. We're seeing a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot of teams, but we are seeing some teams, San Diego's one that quickly comes to my mind, where they're going with six-man rotations now, Sean. And I think that, especially when you get into what they call the dog days of summer, could really be advantageous for many other teams, especially trying to make a playoff run.
Boy, to close things out high level, Paul Goldschmidt, I was just amazed how Cardinal fans didn't seem to get excited when they acquired him. It's like, did you watch the games when we played Arizona? I mean, he had the Cardinals for lunch. And, man, is he's back in that zone where I remember his last couple of years in Arizona. He just is mashing everything in his path.
He certainly is. Well, you think back to his first year, Sean, in 2019, got off to a slow start, which has really been his MO throughout his career, as great as he has been. But then you take the second half of 2019, and he was really mashing the baseball. Granted, you have the pandemic year in 2020, 2021. You have a pretty decent year, but now this year, I'd be hard pressed and to say or to see anyone else. I know there's a lot of focus on Aaron Judge and what he's doing with the Yankees, but he's in the city of New York, as we all know, the media capital of the world. If Paul Goldschmidt's doing the same thing in New York instead of St. Louis, while St. Louis does get some good press as far as baseball is concerned, I think there's a lot more conversation with Paul Goldschmidt. The other part of that scenario is the fact that Paul doesn't like to talk about himself. He's about the team. I mean, literally, he doesn't like to do it, Sean. And so that's also, I believe, part of the equation why maybe some may say, well, why aren't we hearing more national things about Paul Goldschmidt? He's just not that type of person. He doesn't like the spotlight. He just quietly goes about his business. And really, you think about it, when we talk about five-tool players, a lot of times we're talking about outfielders, right? But you think about what he's doing from an offensive standpoint, hitting at a high rate, hitting for power, hitting to all fields, Sean. I mean, we had to start a spray chart back when he started hitting hot in the first part of May, and we've continued that spray chart. And, I mean, he's literally hitting to all fields. But he's also, while he doesn't have blazing speed like a Bader or an Edmund, he's a very good base runner. And as we know, he's a gold glove first baseman. He's really a five-tool player, even at the age of, 33, 34 years old. He's absolutely incredible. And the one thing I'll say is, and we even talked about it last night in the postgame show, Al Grabowski and I did, Sean, was the fact that I think the Cardinals, what they did last night while falling short, is I think we're seeing this offense can be very, very scary. Some of the young guys are coming up. Brendan Donovan's been an amazing story. You've got Edmund doing his thing at the top of the order. Arenado, Goldie, who we just talked to. Dylan Carlson's really starting to hit. You start to get O'Neill potentially going back to what he did last year. I mean, you've got a very deep lineup that can be very scary for opposing teams. You add a little bit of pitching to what you already have right now, and I think the Cardinals could be set up for a real interesting fall if everything falls into place.
Man, I could talk to you for about 3 or 4 hours, my friend, but Scott Warman, so good to chat with you, and
you too,
look forward to seeing you all through the season. Yeah, it's got a, I guess, you got to like the people component over there, a little bit of energy when you do the post-game shows as opposed to going to a sterile, soundproof studio. You know, you're out there among the people, what have you.
That's fun, to be with the people. I think we enjoy, actually, Sean, doing the hockey thing, where actually for the home games, we're actually in a studio that's actually in the arena. You get a part of that electricity where, like you said, you're in a studio sometimes and you kind of get immersed into that and not the crowd. Even though I will tell you, there are times, especially during big Cardinal games or like with the Cubs or what have you, or especially playoff games, and you're in that studio, our windows are rocking over that studio over Ballpark Village. So you do get a little bit of that, that's for sure.
Well, when I heard you handle the 2011 post game after they won the World Series, I don't think there's a bartender who spoke to more inebriated people than you did that night. I mean, that was earth-shattering. I thought, you know, you were going to say last call, and I don't mean in radio terms. It was something, my friend. Scott Warman, so good to talk to you, brother.
You too, John. Great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Back after this, more Sports Saturday on WSMI.
It's 10 minutes to 10 right here on FM 106. Boy, that was great to hear Scott Warman on my times. I've watched him on TV. Great talking to him. Some of the Sports Saturday sponsors for you, thanks to them. Go out and patronize them. Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond. Kurt's 24-hour towing in Litchfield. Call 324-2400. Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a world of healthcare. And Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville. Taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. And sitting in for Tim Mice, here's WSMI's Sean Bellent.
All right. Thank you very much, Jennifer. And we'll try to connect with Chris Blair before we're done at Worldwide Technology Raceway. But an exciting day up in Bloomington today. We have The Shriners High School All-Star Game. Imagine suiting up on a day like this. Thankfully, the heat relented a little bit. The initial weather predictions were not pretty. Let's take a look at who is on the roster for this All-Star Game. Magnus Wells out of Hillsboro, the legendary Magnus, a legendary wrestler, football player. Nokomis, Landon Engelman, suiting up at safety. And then one of my favorites, Dustin Johnson out of Williamsville, Johnny Neal Rochester, Reed Timmerman, modern day, and Jersey Community High Edward Roberts, Kyle Leonard out of Carrollton High School. All right, and our apologies to this individual. We are still dealing with some of the power outages, and I know there was a power outage in your neck of the woods, Chris Blair with Worldwide Technology Raceway. Are the lights on there? I guess you have generators and everything else, and you get your power from across the river, I believe.
Oh, hey, we get our power from Ameren. We haven't had any outages. I did have one at my house for about an hour, a little less than an hour yesterday morning when the storm first came through. But other than that, we've been fantastic and no issues at the track whatsoever. So Ameren's done a fantastic job of upgrading our grid, keeping us rolling.
Totally beautiful, and I have to tell you, this is one of the greatest stories. You know, I think of comeback players, players who came back from injury, players who forgotten got to suit up again. Worldwide Technology Raceway has to be the greatest sports facility comeback story of all time. It's unbelievable what you have done with a facility that was at death's door after the Dover Downs folks packed up and went away.
Yeah, well, that's all because of Curtis Francois, our track owner. He was a big racing fan. He's also a very good businessman and involved with a lot of commercial development, residential development in our area. And he didn't want to see the racetrack go away because he knew if it did, we would never have another major racing facility in the St. Louis area. And so he stepped up and he rallied the support of a lot of other great folks and made this possible. When you say we were at death's door, it was literally 2 weeks away from being sold for scrap metal when Curtis intervened back in 2011 and told everybody just to calm down and give him a chance to make this work. And I've been fortunate enough to have been here 10 years and to go from where we started, where we were just hoping that someday we might get the NASCAR Truck Series back or hoping that maybe IndyCar would come back, to overcome all that we had to overcome and get the Cup Series. It is truly a remarkable comeback story.
Well, and we're not here to talk about the past, but I remember Gateway, they had some tough luck. You had the first Busch race in the mid-90s, incredible heat, a couple of people just didn't know, didn't have the experience. You just have to be smart when you go to a race, you hydrate and everything else, and the problems with the surface. Whole different story here, I remember Texas Terry getting mad. So you guys have handled everything, the logistics. Everything top shelf from day one, ever since this ownership group took over. And obviously with the biggest series in NASCAR, you want to make a great first impression. And holy cow, you hit it out of the park.
Yeah, that's one of the things. We had a meeting the other day with some of our law enforcement agencies and different groups that worked with us, our EMS providers and everyone. And, we made the statement a lot of people, they remember when they talk about the old Gateway, they talk about that race where the track surface came apart and all that. That just kind of shows you what we've done to ensure that that doesn't happen. So now when everybody talks about Worldwide Technology Raceway or Gateway, as a lot of folks still call it, it's about the great race that happened in June of 2022 that produced great racing, incredible crowds, and everybody seemed to have a great time, and that's what we were really after. We delivered the wow factor. So, I think we erased the past, and now we're just focused on the future.
Well, the thing that struck me, we always, St. Louis, sometimes you get a complex, especially with the NFL experience. You deal with Stan Kroenke, and then you hear all the NFL talking heads. Oh, yeah, St. Louis is a baseball town, terrible football town. And I don't think anyone in the racing media ever trash talked St. Louis, but they kind of had the, I guess, Missouri attitude show me, and doggone it, watching the NASCAR shows on Fox and elsewhere after the race where, you're not dealing not with the bigger audience of race day, but the hardcore racing fan. I mean, they just couldn't stop gushing about St. Louis, quote, or quote-unquote Madison and Worldwide Technology Raceway. That would be pretty gratifying.
Yeah, it really was, because that's one of those things we've been trying to overcome for so long. And, you know, being able to show that, and again, it kind of, for the city, it kind of shows you what happens when you get local people who love their town behind a project. And that's the what we were looking at with Curtis and the team here, is that, you know, the majority of our staff are locals, or it's folks who've moved here and have grown to love the place. And we're not, you know, you can't just pick up a racetrack and take it to L.A. so you can get a better stadium package or a better tax break. So, you know, we work with our local community because we want everything to succeed. You know, Kroenke's Kroenke, and I'm fortunate enough I get to work for Curtis Francois, and it's a whole different mindset of how we're going to, you know, treat the local customers and our local fan base.
It had to be an emotional sight, yourself, Curtis, and others, to look out over every seat being full for that cup race. That had to be special.
It really was, you know, just because there's so many challenges, and when it comes to live entertainment these days, you know, you see, you turn on a lot of events, even NFL games are having empty seats, and to show the success that we had. And, you know, the amazing thing, too, is the immediate response after the race, the number of people who've already started renewing tickets, as well as people from other parts of the country who are calling up saying, hey, we don't want to miss it this year, this coming year. So I think we're going to see another fantastic crowd again in 2023, based on the response we had. I was talking to a group of folks who came out from Washington State, some folks from Oregon, and they had such a great time. They said they originally planned for this to be a one-time visit, but now they're already making plans for next year because they're bringing some of their friends back. And, you know, that's all we could ask for is, you know, people tell their friends and they keep coming back, and that's kind of the position we were hoping for.
Yeah, and ever think, is there even any talk at all about maybe tacking on some seats? I sit there and look at, you know, that final turn before you hit the finish line, the north side of the track. Any talk at all or any thought to maybe tacking on to the, adding on to the 57K capacity?
At this time, I don't think so. I mean, when you take a look at Phoenix, which hosts the season finale, it's only a 40,000-seat venue or 42,000-seat venue. Homestead is just a little over 40,000. So when it comes to the sizes of racetracks, we're in a really sweet spot of where we need to be so that we can, you know, keep the demand up and make those crowds look good, because, you know, a full grandstand adds a whole lot of energy and a whole lot of excitement. And I think where we're at, we're in a really good spot, and I don't really want to mess with something that's currently working, you know.
I understand that. And, you know, let's talk about, I don't want to get into too much old versus new, but I'll throw out one more example. When you talk about that coordination with all of the governments and authorities and transportation folks, I still remember that Rusty Wallace Busch Series race, as it was at the time. And MoDOT just, you know, everybody's coming from Arnold because that's Wallace family territory from across the river. And MoDOT, you know, they go ahead and launch a construction project that weekend. And everybody from Arnold's fuming, coming up 203, and they're at the race late. The coordination here, the St. Clair County Transit District, the Madison County Transit District, I know I hopped on a... to the truck race. I took one of the buses out of the old St. Clair 10 in Fairview. The coordination and getting people in and out of the facility and the thought behind improving traffic flow, and you guys had the rideshare folks operate out of the golf course. Man, I mean, it's as much thought as I've seen to getting people in and out of a venue where, again, it's not Busch Stadium where you're going to have 82 regular season games. You can't come up with permanent traffic patterns, but holy cow, that was masterful.
Well, that was, you know, a lot of that came from the support, and we have a great working relationship with the Illinois State Police, the Illinois Department of Transportation, as well as the city and county groups. And we started planning that 9 months out. So that was 9 months of planning that went into that, and we've already had meetings after the event on how we can fine-tune it. And that's a communication process that we, you know, we knew would be important. And with working with IDOT, they also connected with the folks over at MoDOT, so they were aware of what was going on. So it was, you know, communication was the key to making this thing work, and that's one of the things we focused on from the very beginning.
I know in the past there was an effort to promote the speedway at the local tracks, and I don't know how effective it was in the past, but holy cow, when you really connect and you put a cup racer in one of those big winged monsters over at Tri-City Speedway. That's magic. That's where the rubber meets the road as far as fan engagement and making people at those tracks feel connected to the big ones. That seemed to be a major success.
Well, that's something that's been important to us from the very beginning. When I'm not at our racetrack watching what we're doing on a weekly basis, I'm usually at another track somewhere else, a short track. And, you know, we've always been active with our promotions and doing co-op things with Chili Bowl and Snowball Derby and Oktoberfest from across Wisconsin, mainly because we're friends with a lot of those promoters. But it's where all of us came from, and we want to make sure we're giving back and doing a good job of that. And it works for us. I mean, we have that connection where the fans, they feel more at home because they see us and they know they can talk to us. And it's worked out really, really well, and the racers appreciate that also. Because all these NASCAR racers came from somewhere, and they all love giving back too and going back to the grassroots. And so it's a very critical part of this whole equation for us, is making sure we don't forget where we came from and stay on top of the promotional efforts on that level.
Well, sorry, Town Hall folks, we're going to roll over here just a little bit longer. I got to keep this going. And Chris, just tell me how much time you have before it, because I know you have a big event at the Strip.
Yeah, tonight we've got a great show. We've got the Midwest Pro Mod Series. We've got Nostalgia Top Fuel front engine dragsters, jet cars, Top Fuel Harleys. We've got it's a full-blown circus of racing this evening. So it's shaping up to be a pretty good day of racing.
Oh, those jet cars. That reminds me, like, growing up in the 80s and the Green Monster showed up everywhere. Busch Stadium, they drove it out onto the field, and I never heard anything so loud in my life. It was special. It was awesome. And I'll talk more about the drag strips. I'm going to bring in one more point about talking about the small tracks and the big tracks and connecting them. I have to think the Kyle Larson redemption tour before he went out and won the cup title last season, that seemed to be like grassroots politics, where that really was, to me, wound up being a boon for NASCAR.
Oh, it really did, and it really helped the local short tracks as well, because a lot of folks who were just NASCAR fans who mainly were interested in tuning in, they started seeing what Kyle was doing, and that got their attention, so they were going out because they wanted to see how he was doing and what the shows were all about. And, his redemption tour was taking place during COVID, so in a lot of cases, the only places you could see any kind of outdoor racing or attend an event in person was at a short track, where some of the rules may have been a little easier than gathering together the bigger crowds. So what Kyle did there, I think it sent a message to a lot of people, because then he comes back and he wins the championship the next year. So for a lot of those car owners who didn't want their drivers out doing these other races because they thought it distracted them, now they're encouraging their drivers to go out and race in these other events, It just creates that bond. It creates that pipeline both directions, where NASCAR now wins because short track fans want to see what Kyle Larson is doing, and, vice versa, where the other fans want to check it out and see what's going on. And it was kind of funny. I was at a race out in Washington State last year, and I'm sitting in the grandstands with these fans, and they said, yeah, we're not NASCAR fans, but we're Kyle Larson fans. So we're tuning in and watching it because Kyle's kicking everybody's butt right now. And so they started watching NASCAR because they had, they watched Kyle race on the local dirt track, and that drew them back into the sport. So NASCAR really did win from that.
Boy, in the economic impact of your Speedway, I mean, for people who watch the St. Louis News and they think there are three or four things gone, boy, are they missing the boat. If you don't drive past the raceway, you don't realize how packed that parking lot is through the. And it's not just over the summer. I mean, it's early in the spring and well into the fall.
Yeah, our season starts early March and goes through really the 1st of November, and then that rolls into the Christmas lights show. Just based off of a study that Maryville University did, our cup race weekend, just that, that week of the cup race generated almost $60 million in economic impact for the surrounding community. And anybody who tried to get a hotel room at the last minute, they were aware. All the hotels were full. I think there was people staying, as far as 90 miles away because we had so many out-of-town visitors. So that really sent a message. But, we do so many big events with NHRA and IndyCar and the weekly events like we have going on this week. I mean, there's always something going, usually three to four events at a time at the racetrack. And it's a good economic generator for the whole community.
You know, that drag strip is something, and I know I did some side work announcing over there in 2019. I had no idea how timing racing works, and it showed. And I just want to apologize to WWT Raceway for, you know, I think there was the event. You know, you had Butch Patrick / Eddie Munster out there with Dragula, and it was raining cats and dogs. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to help the situation here. I'm going to interview Butch Patrick over the, you know, the high-powered radio station and speakers, and I'll never forget. Ladies and gentlemen, the legend of Mockingbird Lane, please welcome Eddie Munster. Butch Patrick. Dude, I'm Gary from Arnold. I went over to the merchandise table. I thought he looked like Butch. And like, hey, Butch, want to do an interview? It wasn't Butch. And, of course, old John Bishi. Yeah, so I pretended like I meant to do that. It was, as I mentioned, we were going to talk to Gary from Arnold. But anyway, so I left, and George and the crew there, so so if I show up there, I'm usually in a disguise. But anyway, just the drag strip, I mean, that's the neatest thing. Guys get out there, local racers, and you never know, you can't judge what somebody has based on the outer shell of the vehicle. I mean, I saw a guy with a Chevy Monza putting serious horsepower under the hood. So you go out there like, oh, here's a Dodge Omni versus a 69 Mustang. Well, you know, it's kind of like the pool hustler. You don't know what that guy's got under the hood.
Exactly. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's basically an open playground for anybody who loves vehicles. You know, if you just want to bring out your you know, the grocery getter, your minivan, and give it a shot, or if you want to get something that you just rode off the showroom floor that you want to give a try, or something you've been working on in your garage for 20 years, that's one of the great things about drag racing, is it provides that opportunity for people to go out there and get that outlet.
Yeah, it's a great event this weekend. Just again, I know you mentioned it earlier, but I mean, this is people are looking for something to do, and all of a sudden we got a break from the heat wave. If you're looking for some unplanned fun, this weekend's a great time to go out there to the strip.
Yeah, and like tonight, you know, I said, I'm telling everybody, for the best show experience, get there around 6 o'clock, because about 7, we'll have the jet cars going. You'll still be able to see all the header flames coming off all those fuel cars. And 10:20 tonight, we have fireworks. So it's a great little show, you know, great for the family. The entire family will love it. So, you know, that's tonight down here at the racetrack.
Yeah, I probably kept you a little long. I'll wrap it up here, but some big notes. Indy Racing coming to town, and that's even more interesting. I mean, he's still finding his way a little bit, but seeing old number 48 roll into town. Yeah, we didn't get to see it. Only left the Cup Series before it reached here, but always neat to see Jimmy Johnson roll into town.
Yeah, it's going to be a tremendous event because, you know, that's one of the things we were hoping that Jimmy would have raced with us last year. But, you know, you get Jimmy Johnson, then you've got these guys like Romain Grosjean from Formula One, who, if you watch the Draft or Survive series, he's the guy who had that massive fireball a couple of years ago and walked away from it. There's, you know, some, you know, former Formula One guys. You got, you know, Jimmy Johnson. Then you got so many legends of the sport that are still active and competing. Legendary cars such as McLaren and Penske and Andretti. I mean, it's the showcase. It's like a miniature version of the Indianapolis 500, and it's continued to be just an incredible event. Our track produces great racing for that series as well. And, you know, this year we'll have the USAC Silver Crown cars on Friday night. So, I mean, it's a true gearhead lovers show for that particular weekend. And that's August 19th and 20th.
Well, you've had some local sponsors go above and beyond. I mean, they have invested beyond just being beneficial to them in a marketing capacity. The Bomberito dealerships down there come to mind. Just had some great partners along the way.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those where you talk about the community working together. You know, Bomberito Automotive Group, Worldwide Technology. We've had so many others that have come on board here recently to get involved, such as Enterprise and Edward Jones, First Form. So, I mean, everybody looks at this as a community project, and even Ameren is actively involved with all the things that we're doing down here. So, you know, you take a look at that, and that just kind of shows you when, you know, a local business, other businesses, and the government can work together, you can do a lot of great things instead of everybody throwing roadblocks. So we've been very fortunate that we've got everybody working with us to make this dream a reality.
Well, one last note, and the great gem there that maybe everyone doesn't know about, inside the oval, the Cartplex. That thing is a blast to watch, and I can only imagine how much fun it is to drive, and you don't necessarily have to be a kid.
Yeah, that's right. We have we have the arrive and drive programs, and these carts are capable of between 55 and 60 miles an hour on that course. So these aren't your typical country fair type carts. So they're modified racing carts, and so we have those programs going that anybody can come in off the street as long as they're 12 or over and can run in those. And then we also have league racing. So there's a lot of folks that come out on Wednesday nights for league racing. It's grown very well. And then the people who actually own go-karts that come out and race as part of our Ignite series, that started in 2014 with 12 participants, and now we're well over 150 participants on a regular basis, and it's really growing, and it's right inside the oval track. So, one of our goals is that we'll see some of the kids who started racing there in St. Louis on that go-kart track one day. I hope to see them on that big track, either in a NASCAR Cup car or in an Indy car. That's what our goal is to be the first step in the stepping stone to the big time.
Well, I'll tack this on. One of the fun things about working the strip there for a while, seeing a six-year-old hop in a vehicle, and you can just tell, kind of like when you watch a video of Tiger Woods putting as a kid. There are some kids, you can just tell they're born to race.
Oh, yeah, and then a lot of it, the family support behind them, but some of the skills now that we're seeing with these kids is, playing these racing video games before they even get onto a vehicle for the first time. I know the first time I ever drove any kind of vehicle, I was all over the place. And, these kids now with things they can do with video gaming at a much younger age to get them prepared to get that hand-eye coordination together and the foot coordination together. When they're hopping in, they're ready to go, where, 30 years ago, it would take a guy quite a bit of seat time before they could even get up and running. And now they hop in, they're ready to go. So, we're seeing some amazing youth programs developing from this, and the younger drivers moving up. It's a really, really cool time, and it's a great sport to get kids involved with, because they're going to stay busy. They're going to have a lot of work that they're going to have to do, but we've seen some tremendous success stories from people who have gone through racing, we're hoping that we can just keep that rolling here at Worldwide Technology Raceway.
Well, Chris Blair, again. Not only a success as far as drawing in the racing fans, but really once again making the St. Louis sports scene, making St. Louis look great as a sports city. Congratulations for everything you've achieved over there, and I look forward to whatever you have for us next. It just seems like things just get bigger and better all the time.
Yeah, we're always plugging away, so we're hoping to be doing some more great things and announcing some more good stuff here pretty soon.
And someday I'll meet Butch Patrick over there. And not Gary from Arnold. But anyway, thank you so much for your time. Hope we didn't take up too much of it.
Oh, it's all good, man. Hope you guys have a great day, and I hope we see some of your listeners here tonight at the race.